This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, January 23rd, 2013. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, Community Clinic celebrates its 100,000th patient.
Also, Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business sits down with legislators to discuss what's next for the Arkansas legislature. Plus, we take a look at the recent surge of secondhand stores in the area.
First, beginning yesterday, a portion of Harvey Dowell Road near Lake Sequoia in Washington County is closed as county crews work to replace the Harvey Dowell Bridge. Assistant County Road Superintendent Sean Schrum says the time was ripe for the bridge to be replaced.
The bridge was built in 1926, and it's a single-lane bridge. The max weight limit on it is 7 tons. It's a through-truss bridge, which means that taller vehicles can't go over it, even if they weren't overweight. But right now, the fire department cannot get their fire trucks over it, and so this delays some response times. You know, Round Mountain Fire Department has pushed us along to get this done. We've been wanting to do it, but it's definitely an important project to get done for safety reasons.
Schrum says that construction of the bridge will cost between $400,000 and $500,000, not including labor costs for the county crew that will be building the bridge. Construction is expected to take most of the year, but that, of course, will depend on the weather.
Of course, right now we're having good weather for construction, but if it starts raining, that's going to slow us down. I've kind of been telling people hopefully by December, and I know that seems like a long time, but when we're pouring concrete and stuff, we have to let it set and cure out for so many days before we can go on to the next step.
While demolition of the old bridge and construction of the new one is underway, Harvey Dowell Road will remain closed.
Next week, Mercy NWA in Rogers and Ronald McDonald House Charities of Arkoma will begin work on a place of healing for families. They will transform an existing space in the hospital into a family room for use by the families of children checked into the hospital. Stephanie Medford of the Ronald McDonald Charities chapter says the idea behind the family room is to keep families close to their children while undergoing treatment. She says children heal better and faster when loved ones are nearby.
So our entire goal with this whole project and the whole program of a Ronald McDonald Family Room is to keep families together so that children will heal better and faster. And we feel like and we believe if we can take some of the stress of trying to figure out, okay, where's our next meal going to come from? Okay, where are we going to sleep tonight so that we can be close to our child? How are we going to take a shower? How are we going to do our laundry? You know, if we can alleviate some of that stress for the families, then they're better able to deal with all of the emotional, physical, and, you know, just mental major decision-making that has to happen in order to take care of their ill child.
The family room will be contained in about 3,200 square feet of renovated space on the third floor of the hospital. It will include 4 bedrooms, a dining room, a fully stocked kitchen, living room area, a playroom for children, a quiet room, storage space, and staff offices. Fundraising has already begun for the $700,000 project, but Medford says aside from monetary donations, contributions of consumable household items are another helpful way people can give to the project.
We have a wish list drive that we constantly are doing to raise anything from paper products to personal hygiene products to food items. Like I said, we have a fully stocked kitchen at all times. So that means breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks 24/7, around the clock. Our goal is that they never have to leave the hospital and they can stay, you know, kind of our phrase is only a heartbeat away from their child, yet they feel like they've kind of gotten away to kind of a place of respite within the hospital. So we provide everything that they need.
Aside from donating money or goods, Medford says people can give their time, as the family room will need volunteers to help check families in and out, to help cook meals for families staying at the family room, and other tasks as are needed. More information can be found on the Facebook page for the Ronald McDonald House Charities of Arkoma.
Two top state health officials say expanding Medicaid, according to the Federal Affordable Care Act, is a good choice for Arkansas and would help solve funding issues for the state's largest hospital, as well as many rural hospitals. University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences Chancellor Dr. Dan Ron and State Surgeon General Dr. Joe Thompson met with the House Public Health, Welfare, and Labor Committee yesterday. Both are advocating for expansion. Committee Chair John Burris, a Republican from Harrison, says the meeting focused mostly on expanding Medicaid, but he wants to hear more about the impact of the private health insurance expansion required by the federal health care law before deciding on an optional Medicaid expansion.
More people having coverage has an impact, be it Medicaid or private insured, and again, private insured having more of an impact because of the reimbursement rate. And it's just, when you're talking rural hospitals, and Dr. Thompson kind of agreed, I think, you know, when you're talking rural hospitals especially, who are just teetering on that, you know, balance in the books because of uncompensated care, well, 250,000 people with private plan has a huge impact.
Ron says the expansion of private coverage will have a significant impact, but Medicaid expansion is needed as well.
The combination of the insurance exchange and Medicaid expansion would drastically reduce the number of uninsured in the state. The RAND report estimates that it would reduce that from 500,000 to 100,000 uninsured, depending upon the uptake in the private sector.
He says fewer uninsured people through both Medicaid and private insurance will reduce the amount taxpayers currently pay for uncompensated care.
Governor Mike Beebe is petitioning the federal government for assistance in regard to the Christmas Day winter storm that tore through seven central Arkansas counties. In his letter to President Obama yesterday, Governor Beebe requested that seven of the worst-hit counties be declared a major disaster area. According to a statement released by the governor's office, damage in those seven counties created an estimated $9 million in storm damage, with most of that being related to debris removal costs. A formal disaster designation by the federal government could mean that state and local agencies could recoup some of the storm response costs from resulting federal aid.
Kiplinger's Personal Finance magazine has ranked the University of Arkansas 65th on the publication's top 100 best values in public colleges list for 2013. The ranking is a result of an assessment of several academic standards, including the admission rate, the percentage of students returning for their sophomore year, the student-to-faculty ratio, and the four-year graduation rate. Low costs, abundant financial aid, and low average debt at graduation are also factors used in making the ranking. Last year, the university was ranked 44th on Forbes' annual Top 100 Best Buy Colleges list.
The Razorback baseball team is still more than 3 weeks away from its season opener, but the team is receiving some preseason praise. In the Perfect Game preseason poll released yesterday, Arkansas was ranked second behind North Carolina, but above SEC teams Vanderbilt, LSU, and Florida, all of which were ranked within the top 10 slots of the poll. The Perfect Game poll is the second preseason poll that has given the Diamond Hogs high rankings. Collegiate baseball placed Arkansas as number one on its top 40 poll for the 2013 season. The Hogs open their season February 15th at home against Western Illinois.
Increasing cloudiness tonight. Lows will be around 33 in northwest Arkansas, mid-40s for the Arkansas River Valley tonight. Tomorrow, cloudy, slight chance of drizzle. Highs from 38 in northwest Arkansas to mid-40s for the Arkansas River Valley. And for tomorrow night, cloudy. Lows in northwest Arkansas in the mid to upper 20s. Cloudy with a slight chance of rain or drizzle before midnight, and lows around 31 tomorrow night in the Arkansas River Valley.
This is Ozarks at Large. The first week of the Arkansas 89th General Assembly is over, and we're through the middle of the second week as more bills are filed by members of the Senate and House. At the conclusion of last week's business, Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business sat down with two legislators to discuss what's ahead for the legislature. Roby talked to David Sanders, a Republican member of the Senate from Little Rock, and Warwick Sabin, a Democratic member of the House, also from Little Rock. The conversation included talk about Medicaid expansion, the death penalty, taxes, and ethics. Warwick Sabin is in his first term in the House, and David Sanders is in his first term in the Senate, though he did serve one term previously in the House. Roby began the discussion by asking Senator Sanders what might be different for this legislative agenda since the GOP is in control at the Capitol.
Well, I mean, for instance, if you go back to the debate over taxes in the last legislative session back in 2011, I mean, what you had were Republicans and Democrats working together to pass tax cuts, really more than what the administration had asked for, but they did it in an agreeable way. Both chambers got together, both parties got together, and they worked out an agreement. So I think, look, it is different in Arkansas. The truth is, Warwick and I have known each other since, gosh, we were college age.
That's right.
We worked together. there are other members in both chambers that we've known for a long time. There's a bit of a trust quotient there, I think, that really enters into the debate, and I think it will pay off huge dividends on down.
Well, and especially in the House, we have a lot of members that are in the age range of David and I, in our 30s, and we haven't known a different sort of situation as to what we have now. The margin is very close, especially in the House. It's only 51-49. I think Speaker Carter was elected with an awful lot of Democratic support, even though he's a Republican. And he even appointed Democratic chairman of certain committees. And on certain committees, the Democrats have the majority, like on House Public Health. And so we're going to have to work together, whether we like it or not. I think in this case, we want to work together. We want to avoid some of the problems that are happening in Washington, D.C. And I think that, you know, in order for us to govern effectively, especially in partnership with Governor Beebe, we're going to have to work together. So that's the spirit that we're entering.
Speaking of Governor Beebe, I think we'll go through some of the details of his State of the State address here in a little bit, but he made a really interesting day after public announcement on the death penalty. Basically said that if the legislature sent him a bill, he would repeal capital punishment. Do either of you see this happening?
Well, no. I mean, obviously the death penalty is on the policy agenda for the legislature as a result of the Supreme Court case that struck it down. I don't think any of us really anticipated that the governor would say that. I will say this. You've worked for a governor. I've worked for a governor. You know, there's one issue that all governors say is the toughest part of the job, and that is signing the death warrants. It's very hard. I think we will deal with the death penalty in this legislative session. I tend to think that we will come out with legislation reinstating the death penalty. But it was a sort of an interesting twist in the policy debate.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the Supreme Court has, you know, forced the legislature to get involved on this issue. I think that Governor Beebe certainly issued an invitation for us to consider the merits of the death penalty. Whether or not, you know, both chambers would come to an agreement that we would get rid of it, it's probably unlikely. But certainly you have to take the governor, you know, at face value with his remarks. He did say that signing death warrants was the toughest part of his job. And we haven't had any death penalties enacted during the entirety of his tenure so far.
A little over 6 years.
That's
and
right.
He has not presided over a single execution.
That's right.
Although I think he signed four warrants. They've
That's
just
right.
been delayed. Let me hear what you guys kind of have on your own personal agendas for this legislative session. Constituents' agendas, your agendas, things you want to see accomplished. David, I'll let you start first. What's on the agenda for you?
Yeah, you know, if you look at my committee assignments, I'm a member of Revenue and Tax on the Senate side, also Agri, Economic Development as well. So I think a lot of my work will focus on the tax debate as, you know, the nature of my committee assignment and my interests. But obviously the Medicaid issue is coming up before us. And we've had a Medicaid system that is effectively broken and has been running in the red, and we've gotten some good news, obviously, about that immediate shortfall. But I think we are going to focus, obviously, on the expansion debate, but I think there will be a significant amount of focus on the issue of Medicaid and what we have now, making sure that it works. I'll be involved in that as well and look forward to it.
And parole issues?
Parole issues, you know, when I was in the House, I worked on ethics reform, some cooling off period issues, and I think I'll continue to work on some of that.
All right, Warwick, what's on your calendar?
Well, I'm sponsoring a bill in the House on campaign finance reform, and so I'm also working on ethics issues, and I'm sure we'll be engaged on education and taxes and a whole range of issues, but you know, again, Medicaid expansion is really, you know, at the top of my agenda as far as making sure that we work toward that, and I convince my colleagues of its merits. I've seen the numbers, and I think it's a good thing for Arkansas. And then I'm also looking forward to seeing the governor's energy plan, because I think there are a lot of issues within that are going to affect our economy, our environment, and the future of our state.
All right, gentlemen, let's talk about Medicaid. Big debate. It is going to consume this legislative session's agenda. In large part, it's going to control a lot of the budget decisions that you have to make. Let's start first with the shortfall, the funding gap. What is the number now? Does anybody even know what we're talking about dollar-wise?
Well, it has been adjusted. I think the numbers that we had been working with were around $138 million, and that was taking the governor. It was actually in the governor's budget, his proposal. So that was the shortfall that was in the governor's budget. Interesting, last week, actually, Speaker Carter and Senator Lamoureux came out and said, hey, look, you know, from our standpoint, we're going to cover the shortfall. And we can do that because we have a revenue surplus. Mm-hmm. And there are maybe some other things that we can do in terms of the budget. So I think that realistically is off the table. You know, we've covered that. So I think that gives us freedom to work. Previously, you know, the governor had sort of coupled the idea of the shortfall and expansion together. Those have been decoupled. So it gives us a little breathing room, which I know I'm certainly happy about, and I'm sure Arkansans are happy
about.
Well,
and I think that there were some revised numbers this week that the gap may be lower has shrunk.
But one thing we can agree on, I mean, this is a long-term problem, and we have an inefficient system. And one of the reasons why I'm supporting Medicaid expansion is because, you know, we're going to insure more people through that expansion that will, you know, cut down on some of these inefficiencies, people who aren't showing up at emergency rooms for primary care. We're also going to be building in, you know, the medical homes and some of the other reforms that the governor's office has proposed. And, you know, we're looking at more money obviously coming in from the federal government. I mean, they're fully funding it 100% for the first few years, and then eventually the state share, you know, is no more than 10%, which is not insignificant, but I think that it's certainly doable with these efficiencies and, again, with the, you know, economic multipliers that happen when you expand Medicaid. And then on the flip side, you know, if you don't expand Medicaid, what you're looking at is a pretty unsustainable system. You have the risk of rural hospitals closing. You have more uninsured. You don't have the money circulating in the economy and that economic impact that happens. And so, to me, you know, once you've really studied the numbers and the impacts that are involved, it becomes a no-brainer. And I don't say that to minimize the importance of the debate, but I think to reject an offer like that and for Arkansas to be basically contributing to a system to pay for the health care of people in New York and California and Michigan ultimately makes no sense.
There's a contrary opinion to that.
Well, yes. I mean, and there is. And the fact is, we have to look at the system in its totality. The fact is, today what we have is broken. The idea of putting an additional 250 or as much as 300 or maybe 320,000 people on it, depending on what our sister states do around us, you know, that is not a recipe for sustainability. So I think the focus that we have to have, one, is a slow, deliberate debate, not dragging your feet, but one where you are truly looking at the numbers and truly looking at the long-term impacts. I'll give you an example. One of the things that we saw in the previous legislative session was that the state insurance department and the administration was telling us to jump off, go on board with a state-run exchange. And we didn't. We said, hey, this may not be the best thing for the citizens of Arkansas. 17 other states actually did that. You look at what's happening in Minnesota and in Maryland and some of the other states that formed a state-run exchange, the law says that it has to be self-sustaining by 2015. So that means those taxpayers in those particular states are responsible for it. They're now figuring out how to raise taxes to pay for their exchanges. So I think the best thing that we can do is have a very deliberate debate, really look at all the far-reaching implications. Are all the numbers that we are looking at real? Look what's happened this week even. You know, one of the things that we signaled that we would really be interested in is maybe looking at something less than full expansion. Mm-hmm. And we were told, no, it's not possible. But what time has brought us is the possibility, maybe the glimmer of hope, something that we could customize in Arkansas that makes more sense.
Yep. Well, what I do worry about is when we start doubting numbers that are coming from experts, I do think we run the risk of bringing to Arkansas a lot of the dysfunction that's happening in Washington, D.C. I mean, we've seen a study come forward by the RAND Corporation. You know, I've, again, you know, met with our Medicaid director, Andy Allison, our Surgeon General, Joe Thompson. You know, I think that the numbers that have been put forward are, you know, fairly conservative. And I do think the debate is important. Obviously, that's why we're in session. And I think that the deliberation, though, has to occur on the basis of facts and numbers, and not so much the ideology or wanting to deny the numbers that exist because it, you know, conflicts with your preconceived
notion. Yeah, and I agree with that. So, I mean, the point is, what we have to do is we have to make sure we are arguing over the same set of numbers.
Because
today we're not. I mean, the other thing is that we've seen is, you know, a few weeks ago, the revenue shortfall was more significant than it is today. Numbers change, things change. And a lot of the aspects of the health care bill, quite frankly, haven't been worked out in terms of the IT backbone, the infrastructure. So there are a lot of things that we're being asked to do in terms of expanding a major program that's going to saddle future legislators, future governors with decisions based on funding. So we have to do it right.
Does an expansion proposal come forward in this legislative session and get an up or down vote?
I certainly hope so, because I think the idea of saving it for a special session makes no sense on a lot of different levels. I mean, this is the issue we knew we have to wrestle with before we went into the session. Calling a special session is obviously more expensive to the state to begin with. I think it's something like $30,000 a day to go into a special session. This is something, again, one that we knew we were going to have to deal with. The information's at our disposal. I think it's our responsibility as legislators to deal with it while we're in Little Rock for this session.
Well, I think, again, we're talking about a long-term decision that is going to have far-reaching consequences that outlive, you know, your media career and our political careers. So I think, you know, looking at it in a way, making sure we're making the right decision for Arkansas. Only 18 states have signed up for expansion so far. There are several states around us who haven't. So I think we have to look at it not sort of in the vacuum of just Arkansas, but looking at what's happening nationally and how does that affect what Washington will allow us to do in terms of customizing a program that fits Arkansas.
David Sanders is a Republican senator in the Arkansas legislature from Little Rock. We also heard from Warwick Sabin, a Democratic member of the Arkansas House, also from Little Rock. They talked with Roby Brock from our content partner, Talk Business. You can hear more from the conversation at talkbusiness.net. Support for talkbusiness.net on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from four offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com.
And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at BankOzarks.com. And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. More at AECC.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
My name is Monica Hayda.
In just a moment, Community Clinic welcomes its 100th patient into its
100,000th.
Not just, yes.
70 zeros.
Yes, 100,000th patient into its Rogers facility. Last night,
yes,
we got a preview of what will be the Roots Festival 2013 lineup.
We did. A bunch of us from KUAF went to George's Majestic Lounge for the Steel Wheels concert and the Three Penny Acre concert. It was a good time for everybody.
It was. Packed house. Good
great
time.
Great to see the new stage. I hadn't seen it yet.
Deep. Very deep.
I like it.
And I think that will be much more accommodating to more musical acts.
I like it.
In between the set by Three Penny Acre and Steel Wheels, Jeremy from Greenhouse Grill and Brian from Three Penny Acre, the co-founders of the Roots Festival, mm-hmm. gave us a tease of who we can see on stage at Walton Arts Center.
Friday night
mm-hmm. in August. Del McCrory Band.
Right.
And Iris DeMent.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the lineup. That, just a couple of years ago, you would have considered that huge to be the Friday-Saturday night.
Sure.
But that's just one
that's
night.
That's just Friday.
Yeah.
So
Iris DeMent, native born, grew up in California. One of my favorite 10 CDs of last year.
That's what I thought
Sings
you told
Delta,
me. So
yeah.
Exciting.
Yes. And they will give us more details as we get closer
of
to
course.
August. Also want to mention the Fayetteville Public Library will have a youth writing workshop that begins next month. It's beginning the February 4th and from 4 to 5 in the Walmart Storytime Room. It's called Wordplay. It's open to 4th, 5th, and 6th graders. It's designed to give kids a fun relationship with the written word.
Huh.
Registration now open at the Fayetteville Public Library.
I'll be right back, guys.
Yesterday morning was almost a typical day at the Community Clinic campus in Rogers. Patients were checking in. Nurses, doctors, and healthcare providers were seeing those patients. But just a few minutes after 9, Community Clinic staff took note of a milestone. The clinic's 100,000th patient came through the doors yesterday morning, just a week after his third birthday. He received a gift basket with a T-shirt, some books, crayons, and Band-Aids, along with his checkup. The young man and his mother had been alerted ahead of time that the computers at the clinic had calculated their visit would be the 100,000th. Community Clinic has operated in Northwest Arkansas in some fashion for 15 years, but patient visits have skyrocketed, especially since 2008. In just over the last 5 years, the clinic has seen a 102% increase in patient growth. Kathy Grisham is the executive director of Community Clinic.
We are going through a process of changing our design to a patient-centered medical care process where the patient is more involved in their care, and we are focusing on outcomes. We want patients to improve, and we have the services to make that happen with our patients.
Community Clinic operates at other locations as well, including other medical clinics in Siloam Springs and Springdale, dental clinics in Springdale and Rogers, and there are also school-based health clinics at Jones Elementary in Springdale and Owl Creek Elementary School in Fayetteville. Services are provided regardless of the patient's ability to pay, and the clinic works with programs such as Our Kids First, Medicaid, Medicare, and third-party private insurers. To help with the greater need, the clinic in Rogers recently expanded its operation.
So we've got a lab in this area. We do all of our own lab draws for the patients so they don't have to go off-site to do any testing that is necessary for their treatment right here. So.
Leanne Thomas with Community Clinic gave quick tours of the recently added 3,700 square feet yesterday in Rogers. The additional room added more than a dozen new exam rooms. Camry Horn Brooks, the development director at Community Clinic, says the added space just helps the clinic try to keep in step with a growing population in Northwest Arkansas.
We know that the need in Northwest Arkansas is so great, we can barely scratch the surface of all those that need services. So naturally, the best way to reach more is to expand our facilities, and that way we can hire more providers and have more exam space.
Community Clinic now hosts more than 29,000 patient visits annually, more than double the 14,500 patients seen in 2008. In fact, in each of the five previous years, there has been at least a 10% increase in patients seen over the previous calendar year. And often it's been much higher than 10%. Again, Cambry Horn Brooks.
Part of that is due to the growing uninsured population in Northwest Arkansas. Also, as we trend with the uninsured rate, we have strategically opened up new access points for patients to have care. Some of those include expanding the Rogers facility here, as well as expanding the Springdale site, and then opening up our school-based health centers that we partner with the Fayetteville School District and the Springdale School District.
Clinic officials say nearly 60% of their patients are children, and the goal is to make sure they have adequate health care, but also to make sure their parents do too. The clinic provides a health safety net for uninsured and underinsured adults as well. Kathy Grisham, the executive director at Community Clinic, says the higher demand for their services continues to fuel the increase in the services the clinic provides.
And in Northwest Arkansas, that's important because access. People just can't get in if they don't have insurance or way to pay for their care. So we're opening up access.
Yeah, and if you're, gosh, more than doubling the exam rooms, I mean, the access, the ability of people to call and get in faster, sooner?
Yes. We've upgraded our phone system in the last 6 months so that we can handle the call volume we needed to, and we've expanded the exam rooms in Rogers, and we are set to do the same thing in Springdale.
The clinic reached 100,000 patient visits on Monday, 15 years after first offering services. At the current level of patient growth, the next 100,000 patients will walk through the clinic's doors in Northwest Arkansas at a much faster rate.
Oh, it makes my head hurt, but yes, that probably will be what happens.
At least for yesterday's 100,000th patient, the basket full of books and crayons made his doctor's appointment a welcome surprise. You can learn more about the clinic at communityclinicnwa.org.
So, you think you know it all.
Which of the following is a traditional English Christmas vegetable? Jerusalem artichokes, Brussels sprouts, or okra?
What do you think, Barry? Brussels sprouts?
Brussels sprouts. Have you been to England?
No, but we're going next summer.
Okay. Well, bring your sprouts. That's it. Brussels sprouts. I'm Michael Feldman. Join me this week for fun, laughs, and the quiz on the What Do You Know Radio Hour from PRI, Public Radio International.
What Do You Know? Saturday mornings at 10 here on KUAF 91.3 FM.
It is Wednesday, January 23rd, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Acapulco chicken with sticky rice.
Okay.
In less than 15 minutes. I'm starving. Starving. Program at 2 o'clock at the Bella Vista Library, cooking with Chef Kathy.
All right.
This could be fun. And you can learn to make something other than, cereal? Hot dogs and cereal. Yeah.
Noodles.
We're all so pathetic. We are pathetic.
I can't speak for you, but I know that between Antoinette and me, there's very little cooking or baking knowledge.
I can bake things.
Oh, okay.
So if you just want to eat cookies for a while, we're good to go.
I got no problem with that.
I can sort of cook.
But if we all went to Bella Vista Library this afternoon, we'd all learn more. Okay.
All right. Reading Adventures with Scout. Don't cook Scout. Scout's a mastiff. And he will be at the Rogers Public Library at 3:30. Apparently, reading to dogs is really good for kids.
I've done it with my dogs.
With kids or dogs?
No, I read. I occasionally read to my dogs, the newspaper or something.
Do they like it?
They seem indifferent.
Mine don't really have the attention span for that. Tiny dogs. And a play reading workshop starts tonight at 6 o'clock at the Fayetteville Public Library. They will be talking about Sons of the Prophet, and Stephen Karam will be in town, and Theater Squared will be producing the show later this spring.
That's correct.
So register at faylib.org.
Okay.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
In just a moment, Jacqueline Froelich's story on the surge of secondhand stores in our region. And in about 11 minutes, the latest from the University of Arkansas Fort Smith Academy of the Arts.
Right. We have a couple of sports notes first. Tickets for the Arkansas-Missouri basketball game are sold out, which is, you know.
That's good. That's where you want your program to be.
It is, but bad if you wanted to go.
Yes. And I can't remember who, but I apologize to whoever I told last week, don't worry about it. You'll go to the box office and pick up tickets for that game.
Yeah.
I was wrong.
Sorry about that.
Mm-hmm.
The game is at Bud Walton Arena Saturday the 16th. It's at 3, but it will be televised on ESPN, so you can watch it there. And this is the first sellout of the season.
Absolutely.
Very cool.
Also, in the athletic world, the men's and women's track and field teams will host the Razorback Team Invitational. This is still indoor track season.
Right.
It's Friday and Saturday. First events begin Friday morning at 11. It takes place at the Randall Tyson Track Center. 11 teams will be there. University of Arkansas men are currently ranked number one in the country. The women are fifth in the country.
John Brown University men's basketball team is now ranked fourth in the NAIA poll. Highest ranking in the program's history.
Yep.
Cool. Tomorrow, the men's team and the women's team play at Lubbock Christian. The next home games for both the teams will be January 31st in Siloam Springs.
This is Ozarks at Large. Consumers are divided into three categories: retail shoppers, thrifters, and vintage collectors. All three share one thing in common, especially since the Great Recession: scoring a bargain. The proliferation of outlet and dollar stores in recent years is one sure sign that patrons demand rock-bottom price points. But as Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, even charitable resale stores are sometimes acting like big-box chains.
Take Goodwill, the iconic American thrift store, historically cited in low-income neighborhoods and warehouse districts. Now Goodwills are opening in popular shopping centers like this one on College Avenue next to Fiesta Square. Shoppers browse long racks of clothing sorted by gender, age, size, and color. Keeping track of things is Francie Ford, district manager. When she first moved to Northwest Arkansas, only one Goodwill operated in Springdale.
We have locations in Bella Vista, two in Fayetteville, one in Bentonville, one in Springdale. And then we have another donation center in Fayetteville. And then I also oversee the Fort Smith, the Russellville, the Conway, and the Mountain Home location.
And all the stores are clean, well organized, with lots of dressing rooms and fully staffed with sales clerks.
Well, we have a strategy that we want there to be dignity for anybody who shops at Goodwill. We really don't care whether you make $5 a year or $500,000 a year. We take our merchandise and we organize it to make it look as attractive as it can and to make shopping as pleasant an experience as we can.
Ford says on any given day, more than 500 purchases are transacted in the Northwest Arkansas Goodwill District. And donations are on the rise as well, increasing from 83,000 to more than 383,000, a total of 15 million pounds of clothing and household goods. The company's also gone green, partnering with Dell Reconnect, recycling nearly a million pounds of discarded computers into e-waste at no cost to patrons. But if you think about it, donating your clothes and household goods rather than throwing them out is also a green practice. 90% of clothing donations end up on Goodwill sales floor, with 10% dispatched to post-retail rag contract marketplaces. in Africa and Central America. But in-store prices are consistent and reasonable, and sales specials occur at different times of the year.
I think our prices are fair for the quality. I mean, if most of our things are unit priced, and you might go through like our women's blouses. Now, the truth is at $350, you may find a brand at $350 that is a good value, but you might find a brand at $350 that is an incredible value.
Most items are used, so best to launder or dry clean any purchase once you get it home.
It is Grandma's basement with mothballs. Yes, that is a smell that anybody who's been around the resale business for any period of time, clothes, especially if they've been stored in plastic bags, can develop an aroma of their own.
Some Goodwill employees are hired off the street. Some are graduates from Goodwill's career training program. The nonprofit also offers transitional employment training for individuals with criminal backgrounds. Last year, nearly 2,500 individuals sought career help at Goodwill Career Centers in Springdale and Fayetteville, with nearly 500 being placed into jobs.
Some of those jobs were within our stores. So if somebody goes to our Career Service Center and needs a job, we think it's a win-win situation if they need a job and we have an opening for us to hire them and put them within Goodwill. We can't hire everybody who goes to the Career Services, but we place a lot of people within Goodwill who go to our Career Service Center.
Statewide, Goodwill assisted 6,500 Arkansans to be placed in more than 1,000 community jobs. And like conventional retail chains, Goodwill workers are referred to as associates, says Arkansas spokesperson Rebecca Brockman. She's based in Little Rock.
Yes, Goodwill recently, actually last year, we celebrated our 85th anniversary in Arkansas. And so since 1927, Goodwill has been serving individuals in Arkansas.
Goodwill Industries, founded in Boston more than a century ago by Methodist minister Edgar Helms, initially assisted disabled individuals with career development.
Things were donated, such as furniture and household items that needed repair, and so the people were hired to repair them, and then they were sold. Well, fast forward 8 decades, and the needs of the community have changed. So now we offer different career services that have changed with technology, whether it be computer, e-waste, and that type of thing. So we have always, our mission has always been to help build lives, families, and communities by assisting people with disabilities and other special needs.
Today, the mission of Goodwill, which is not affiliated with any religious organization, also serves individuals who lack education or job experience.
We have over a dozen career centers, again, located across Arkansas, where people, the public, can come in and receive resume preparation, interview skills, and career-oriented classes, computer classes, at no charge.
Nationwide, Goodwill has helped more than 4.2 million secure employment training. It's raised more than $4.4 billion in revenue at more than 2,700 stores with 32 locations in Arkansas. And 82% of revenue is spent directly on programming. And during tough economic times, like the most recent recession, Goodwill does good business. Since 2007, it reported a compound annual growth of 10%.
Our growth really took off in 2008, and so in the past 4 or 5 years, we have grown quite a bit, and we have expanded to Northwest Arkansas and most recently to Northeast Arkansas in Jonesboro and Paragould.
And it's not only financially strapped people shopping at Goodwill stores.
Right. We have studied this, and it's about 50-50 men and women, but really, we serve people of all different ages, and our shoppers and donors are people of all different ages and backgrounds.
Including middle-class patrons.
Exactly. In the past couple of years, thrifting and the idea of repurposing items or finding name-brand items at a thrift store has become very popular. And thanks in part to TV shows such as HGTV or other shows where it's actually pretty trendy to find items and then, as I said, repurpose them, recycle them. And so in the past couple of years, we have seen definitely an influx of all different type of customers.
You can also browse shopgoodwill.com's auction site for bargains. Even the Salvation Army, which assists the indigent and provides disaster relief, is seeing an influx of thrifters at its 600 stores. But Goodwill provides drive-through drop-off centers, doing away with its metal parking lot donation bins.
You actually get to hand them to a person, and then we give you a tax receipt if you want one. So we have found that that is just a better way of providing more jobs and being more convenient in the community. Our motto is donate, shop, change a life.
Many independent charitable thrift stores are working to change lives as well, like The Attic in South Fayetteville. The Attic thrift store was an auxiliary of the historic Fayetteville City Hospital. That hospital was closed by operator Washington Regional Medical Center as a cost-saving measure late last year. The Attic's board has severed ties with WRMC, moving out of the city hospital basement, and has reopened at their new location a few blocks down from City Lumber on South School Street. Former president and bookkeeper Loretta Simmons.
We're still functioning, and though we have to pay rent and utilities, we're going to be able to do the best we can for medical needs in Northwest Arkansas.
Proceeds go towards senior medical services and nursing scholarships. Last year, $17,000 in scholarships. The Attic is open 6 days a week now, 10 to 4, and welcomes donations and new patrons. Unlike Goodwill, the Attic is in smaller quarters, but has a more diverse inventory.
You know, we just hope that people that cannot shop higher-end retail stores can find some name-brand items with us, and they do. Our donations consist of a lot of name-brand items.
Plus, after rent and utilities, all Attic proceeds go directly back into the community, millions of dollars over the years.
We still maintain our 501c3, which is a nonprofit organization. We're probably the only thrift store in Northwest Arkansas that operates with volunteers only. None of us are paid, and we just do it because we're members of the auxiliary and to help in the medical world out there. So we hope after we pay rent and utilities that donations will continue to come in. You know, that's what keeps us going, is the donations and our customers.
And with 20% of all shoppers now flocking to resale stores, prospects look real good. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
The Attic Thrift Store, which provides medical assistance to seniors and nursing scholarships, is now located at 1306 South School Avenue and is open Monday through Saturday. To find a Goodwill near you, visit goodwillar.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellens. With me is Dr. Rosalie Walker-Russell, who is the Executive Director of the University of Arkansas Fort Smith Academy of the Arts. Welcome back.
Oh, thank you. It's great to be here in the new year.
2013.
Yes, already.
You guys don't miss a beat, though. 2012 was busy because you had performances almost up to Christmas, like the weekend before Christmas.
December is always really busy for me. By the time we get to the Christmas holiday, I'm so ready to be home and rest, you know.
But you're going full
bore. We're ready to go
here.
Again. And yes, we're ready to go again. We're actually in the middle of registering students for spring. You know, most of our students return, a large percentage of them return, but we take in a lot of new students, and so we're beginning everything, you know, from children's choir to the teen choirs to the drum circle that's beginning now, to the acting classes, to the musical theater companies, to orchestra, to art classes, to private music lessons. I mean, you name it, everything is beginning. So I would encourage people to go ahead and jump in and register.
Do you try to follow the academic year of surrounding schools?
We try to. Of course, we follow spring break with everyone. And
well, you have to.
Yes. And we end in early May. Well, mid-May, I should say. Around Mother's Day is about when we end all of our classes. Some classes end in April, whereas most of the schools go through the end of May. But we typically follow basically the same schedule. The public schools have started back. The private schools have started back. So we're starting back. Most of our classes students can enroll through the month of January, meaning, you know, choir, for example, started the second week of January. Well, we continue to enroll choir students all the way through the month. We're getting ready to audition new students for orchestra. We'll continue to enroll orchestral students through the month. Once we start our musical theater companies, and those are starting here at the very end of January, actually the Extreme Teens start the last week of January, around the 22nd, 23rd. Once we audition those kids and cast them, then we can't take any new students in that. So I would encourage students to register. The teenagers are doing Singing in the Rain.
Yeah.
Time to audition for that. And then all, you know, the children's companies are starting up, and so I would encourage students to register for that.
Last fall was the first time for visual arts?
Or? No, we've had art for a little while. It's
okay.
A newer program. We haven't expanded it into the junior high school level. But we do take a tour now every semester with the children, and we love to take them to Crystal Bridges, so that's fun.
And now you've got the Regional Art Museum just down
the
street.
Yes, just down the street, and that's that we will take them on a tour to that. You know, we try to really give them a great experience. And you know, the Youth Honor Symphony Orchestra program, that's really growing. There are levels to that, from the children's orchestra, which is at the elementary level, to the junior high full orchestra, and then to the high school Youth Honor Symphony Orchestra program. So that's really evolving and developing, and I encourage students to get in that. They absolutely should do that. And it goes without saying that if you're in a choral ensemble, a musical theater company, or an orchestral ensemble, you should be in private music lessons. So, and then I should tell everybody, the youngest theater company is doing 101 Dalmatians this spring, and we take the first 15 first and second graders. And then the children's theater company is doing Once Upon a Mattress, which is the version of Princess and the Pea.
Sure.
And I would like to be in that one. And we have two companies of that particular group, and so we can take 60 children. One of those companies is almost full already. So time to get involved.
Is that 101 Dalmatians?
That's Once Upon a Mattress.
Okay.
101 Dalmatians, we probably still have about 5 slots left.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're busy.
So you've already got a lot of the Dalmatians.
We have yes. I asked my theater director, what, 15, not 100? She looked at me like.
You get enough of them moving fast enough that you can't tell.
You can't tell.
UAFS.edu/academy.
That's correct.
Or you can call.
Call us at 479-788-7253. And Sarah or Shannon, two of my assistants, can help register you just immediately. And if you want to go online, you can download a registration form. Just send it right in, and we'll get you plugged into the right spot.
Now, there are a couple of concerts coming up. One,
oh yes.
Well, let's go in chronological order.
Okay.
First is one of my favorite titles of all time, Four Pianos and Some Kids. It's
yes.
A concert with four pianos and some kids.
It really literally is. That's Friday night, February 8th. You know, every year since I've been at UAFS, I love to do Valentine type of events. And while this is not just geared to Valentine's Day, it's right there close to the Valentine time. And so Friday night, February 8th, I have been wanting to get some of my pianist friends together forever and do a multi-piano concert. I've done two piano concerts before, and we're going to have some two-piano music on this event, but we also have four-piano music. And so it's friends that many people know. My dear, dear friend, Jenny Law, who is a pianist, accompanist. She works in the academy. She teaches in the academy. She accompanies in the academy. She works in the UAFS music department. She accompanies for everyone in the Arkansas, Fort Smith, and surrounding areas, a much-loved pianist. She's playing. And then, of course, in Northwest Arkansas, the much-loved Jonathan Story, the famous Jonathan Story, he's coming to play. And then my dear friend, Dr. Scott Carroll, who is on faculty at Harding University. And we're doing a night of classical, a night of sacred, and a night of some jazz standards and
Broadway. Okay.
We're doing that's where the kids come in. The Von Trapp family is showing
up. Really?
They are coming to sing and dance to the best of Sound of Music, and the four pianists are playing with them.
Oh, wow.
And so that's going to be fun. And then we're going to round out the night with a really cool four piano patriotic medley. And we're throwing in one other little neat little thing. Jenny and I play, we're invited each year to play on something called Keyboards at Christmas, which is sponsored by Oak Cliff Baptist Church in Fort Smith, and under the direction of Lyndall Hobbs. They have so many pianists at their church, and they have, their, of course, their choir, and they do this wonderful Christmas event with all these pianists, and Jenny and I are guests on that program. Well, Lyndall has arranged an arrangement of O Holy Night for choir and four pianos, and we're gonna do that on the concert. I mean, O Holy Night is just so, it's such a great piece. It wouldn't matter if we played it in July. I would like to hear it. And so that choir is coming.
So with the Von Trapp children, will we hear some of my favorite things?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, you will hear my favorite things. You will hear Edelweiss,
okay.
Do Re Mi, Climb Every Mountain, and The Sound of Music. And they're going to sing and dance. And these are some of our veteran theater students, all ages, of course, because the Von Trapp family, I mean, they're
not all
the same.
Well, they were stair-stepped, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And so are our kids.
Okay. That's right.
And so they're going to do that. And then we're playing some things like movements from the Carnival of the Animals, the Saint-Saëns, some Brahms, a little bit of Mozart, the Darius Milhaud Scaramouche. We're doing the last movement of that, very Brazilian. Just great, entertaining classical music, some really well-known sacred pieces from Holy, Holy, Holy to a medley of timeless hymns, you know, and then these Broadway pieces. So it's a night for anyone and everyone who loves piano music to come.
February 8th. Breedlove Auditorium.
That's correct. And tickets are online. They're ready and available now. They're available at the UAFS box office, 788-7300. You can go online. This is part of our Distinguished Artists series through the Academy of the Arts. So when you go online, just go to uafs.edu and you can go there. Tickets will be available at the door if it's not sold out. We typically sell tickets at the door. We have packed in several hundred people in Breedlove, and it's not really accommodating to several hundred, but we'll squeeze you in.
Okay, all right. Yeah.
Dr. Rosalie Walker Russell is the executive director of the University of Arkansas Fort Smith Academy of the Arts. Four Pianos and Some Kids, A Musical Folly, is scheduled for 7:30 p.m. February 8th at Breedlove Auditorium. For more information on the concert or classes at the Academy of the Arts, you can go online to uafs.edu/academy.
An aggressive agenda for the second Obama administration. House Republicans retreat to Williamsburg and punt the debt ceiling 3 months down the road. The outgoing Secretary of State testifies on Benghazi, while John Kerry's nomination as her successor goes before the Senate committee he chairs. I'm Neil Conan. Political junkie Ken Rudin returns next. Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation is coming up next here on KUAF 91.3 FM.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Paradise.
Where's Paradise again?
Paradise is in Franklin County, yes, along Highway 23. So if you're going down Highway 23, you go south of Turner's Bend.
Uh-huh.
And keep going, and you'll eventually get there. It's inside the Ozark St. Francis National Forest.
Perfect.
Sounds like paradise to me.
It does, actually.
Yeah. Got some Sona tickets to give away.
We do. That's coming up soon.
Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
7:30 is when the baton goes up. And as conductor Paul Haas would tell me, then it has to come down as well before the music starts. And he's on the show tomorrow, by the way, giving a preview.
He is.
At about 6:45 in Star Theater, I will sit down with Paul Haas to have a pre-concert conversation. Music begins at 7:30.
Okay.
All right. So tickets will go to winners who can tell me the correct answer. And where do you send your answer?
You can email it to ozarksatlarge@gmail.com.
All correct answers will go in the ceramic cow, and the appropriate number of winners will be picked out for the tickets. Mm-hmm. All right. So here is the question. On this day in 1957, Walter Frederick Morrison sold the rights to his invention that he called the Pluto Platter to the company Wham-O. What do we commonly call that invention today?
I know this one.
I thought you might.
I'm excited. I know one. I never know the answer.
Yes. Again, the Pluto Platter is what he called it when he sold it to Wham-O on this day in 1957.
Perfect. So if you know what this thing is actually called, or more commonly called, I suppose,
right,
email your answer to ozarksatlarge@gmail.com. You have until tomorrow.
Right.
Tomorrow's show. At noon, so you have time to look it up in case you don't know.
Right. The current name came from college students in Connecticut.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
Actually.
Let's see. Christina Thomas and I will be together on tomorrow's show. We'll give you the answer, award the tickets, talk to Paul Haas from the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas, and much more.
Much more.
Yes. You and I back together on Friday.
Yes, sir.
Are you excited about the Roots Festival?
I am.
It'll be in August.
It's one of my favorites.
Yes.
I very much enjoy it.
Yeah, Iris Dement. I saw her in Eureka Springs years ago, maybe more than 10 years ago, and she was fantastic in the auditorium there.
So you're pretty excited about seeing her on the Walt Disney Center stage?
And Del McCoy.
Well, sure.
Yes. Yes. Excited about both of them.
Excellent. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Yitzhak Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums. Thank you so much for listening.
Tune in tomorrow at noon for an all-new edition of Ozarks at Large, and have a very happy Wednesday. Happy National Pie Day.